Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 2, chapter 29 of Anna Karenina. What he knew was so terrible that now he was prepared to believe anything. What does Karenin know, or does Karenin know? Does he know that Anna is pregnant? 2, why is she so desperate to see Vronsky tonight? It just seemed like she was so preoccupied with that question. You know, her marriage is falling apart. He's just fallen off this horse from the race, and he's obviously had a pretty big day. And all she really cares about is he going to come visit me tonight? It just seemed a bit like, I don't know, she seems a bit obsessive. Swim said the mama fish. He said, so did you all notice that Steva was there having a grand old time, and Anna reached out to him to no avail when she was trying to get information? It gripes me to no end that he is obviously drifting happily through life. Steva was there, you reckon? Who's Steva? Should I know that? At least Anna put herself out to save his marriage. Anna put herself out to save his marriage, which put her on this crash course with Vronsky. Grrr. I am Norwegian said, yeah, I thought that was a little funny. Stepan is just there in his own little world, cruising through life. Steva probably thought it will be lions and gladiators next, was a request. Techrific said, yes, and I used to hate these kinds of carefree people who just seem to cruise through life, avoiding all these sharp objects life throws at us. But we know differently, right? He's in a complete mess. He's cheated on his wife. He's in a financial difficulty, although selling his wife's forest gave him some temporary respite, etc. All these things must weigh on anyone, so we can only surmise he must be delusional and compartmentalizing things like crazy. He's avoiding everything of value and pursuing frivolous things of life of little to no avail. He's a lost soul and should only elicit our sympathy. Things are rarely as they seem, especially if you're in a resentful mood. I'm glad I've learned that lesson and that Tolstoy tries to teach it too. Techrific says, the I-you relationship is completely broken down between husband and wife. Karenin seems to suggest he could have tolerated it. Whoa. He could have tolerated it. Sorry, phone's making buzzy noises. He could have tolerated it if it had been handled internally, i.e. privately. But now when it's been externalized by her reaction to Vronsky's fall, all is lost between them. Anna is relieved, as so often the departing partner is, and the one left behind is broken and angry. That's where things would have been left were it not for the times that this is taking place in. I can find no clearer clue that Anna being relieved, normal human reaction, thinking this is over and done with, delusional. This is where the real tragedy begins. We mustn't forget that in these times the husband took precedence in all matters. So in all likelihood she just not leaving Karenin but also her son. She's not thinking of this but only of Vronsky and meeting him at the earliest. I can't help but wonder what's so great about Vronsky beyond the mere superficial stuff. Even the Lasonic sex scene was almost non-existent, and not that great even, if we are to believe Anna's thoughts in the aftermath of it. I think she just latched onto Vronsky to escape her dreary existence. I also feel she's not the sophisticated woman from the early chapters. She was witty, intelligent, even wise. Now she's reduced to a teenage state where all her critical faculties seem to have left her. Tragedy indeed. Karenin's age and emotional disposition is not suited to handle this at all. He's too rigid and, dare I say it, frigid to act when so much is at stake. It's one thing to be aloof and statesmanlike at work, but here in his private life it's a catastrophe. Maybe his age could help resolve this amicably, but I doubt it. Given his remark about honour, this is painful to follow. You know what, I am enjoying this book, but I will say this at this point. You know, Tolstoy makes these great characters that are flawed. Flawed characters. But also quite beautiful characters. And War and Peace was a perfect example of all these, I had a different favorite character in during every, basically, you know, section of the book, and there were many sections to that book. I don't have a favorite character in this book, and you know what? I don't like Vronsky. I don't like Karenin. I don't like Anna. I don't like Steva. I don't like Kitty. I don't like Dolly, whichever one that is. I don't like any of the characters except for maybe, who's the farmer guy? The farmy dude. He's all right. But I just don't like these characters much so far. And I'm really hoping that changes because, you know, we've got a lot of book ahead of us. But I just don't care, you know? If Anna and Vronsky and Karenin all just go their separate way, cool. I'm cool with that. You know, everyone should just move on. It's not a good thing to be feeling at this point of the book, but yeah, I wonder if anyone else is feeling that. Does anyone else just kind of feel a bit like, eh, these characters all kind of seem shitty? Like shitty people. Not even shitty people. Like, I don't think Karenin's a shitty person. I just think he's kind of a weak person, and I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, Sluggy with 3G says, I have definitely known people like this in my life, prepared to believe anything. Instead of dealing with their problems, they pretend they don't exist and construct this little bubble of reality around themselves where they believe whatever they choose to and ignore the reality of the problem. Eventually, reality butts up to the point where the bubble finally pops and they have to face up to whatever horrible reality they have been avoiding. Karenin definitely knew, but he had been living in his little bubble where everything was fine. Even up to the last moment, he is hoping Anna will shrug off his concerns and tell him he is worrying about nothing. He knows it's not true. To him, it would be better than facing the reality of the situation. Now that Anna has confessed, he can no longer go back to his bubble, and things are irretrievably changed for them both. Why is she so desperate to see Vronsky? I think with the emotions she has gone through during this day, she is grasping for something to ground her. In quick succession, she has had a quick and secret rendezvous with Vronsky, an irritating surprise encounter with her husband, watched Vronsky get thrown from his horse, and then confessed everything to her husband. I Am Norwegian said, Anda. Karenin also said that he used to think that men should just deal with these situations and move on. How could they do nothing, he thought, until he put on his blinkers. But I agree, I hope I'd be the kind of person who would do something. Speaking of doing something, Anna finally lays her cards on the table. Karenin knew everything for a while, but now he can't deny it to himself any longer. Well, you'd hope. Still, I felt bad for him when Anna dropped all pretense and told him how she felt about him. Why is she so desperate to see Vronsky? I think his brush with death showed her how she truly felt about him. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't really have much else to say on that chapter. It's all out in the air. Well, she should just get a divorce, I suppose. Or maybe it's not that easy. Maybe these things get drawn out over months and years and, yeah. Who knows? Okay, let's just read the next chapter. Let's just read the next chapter. I just feel frustrated with this, how, I don't know. This point of the book is just moving too slowly for me. Does anyone else feel that? Like, get together, don't get together. I don't really care, but this is my problem with romance books, because that's kind of my attitude towards a romance story. And when it's the subplot to a book, I'm a sucker for a romance. Don't get me wrong. Like, and if there's a love triangle, I'm sucked into that. As pathetic as that is. But when it's the plot, like, it's just not enough for me. Like, if that's the thing that they're doing in their life that I'm meant to find interesting, like, do they get together or not? Then it's like, oh, no, like, that's not interesting. No one gives a shit, like, who you end up with. Oh, my God, do you find a guy attractive? Okay. What else? Like, what else do you do? What else do you do? Because if that's all that you do, catch you later. I don't give a shit. Like, that's not that interesting. It's interesting as a subplot. But, yeah, no, this has lost me at this point. And I'm just looking at the rest of this book dreading, like, is that what the rest of the book's about? Because someone needs to go to war or something to make this interesting for me. Yeah. Yeah, this is why I shouldn't read romance books. But this is more than just a romance book, right? I don't actually know. Fingers crossed. Anyway, let's continue reading. Part 2, Chapter 30. As always happens, where people congregate, the usual crystallization, if we may call it, of society took place in the little German watering place to which the Shcherbatskys had come, assigning to each person a definite and fixed position. As definitely and inevitably as a particle of water exposed to the cold assumes the well-known form of a snow crystal, did each newcomer on his arrival at the watering place immediately settle into his natural position. First Shcherbatsky, Samt Gehelen und Tochter, which says Prince Shcherbatsky with his wife and daughter. By the premises they occupy, by their name, and by the people they were acquainted with, at once crystallized into their definite and preordained ordained place. There was a real German Fürstin, which is a princess, at the watering place that season, and consequently the crystallization process was accomplished with special energy. Princess Shcherbatskaya particularly wished to introduce her daughter to the German royal princess, and on the second day after their arrival performed that rite. Kitty made a low and graceful curtsy in her very simple dress, that is to say, very stylish summer gown ordered from Paris. The royal princess said, "I hope the roses will soon return to this pretty little face," and at once a definite path was firmly established for the Shcherbatskys, from which it was impossible to deviate. They made acquaintance with the family of an English lady, with a German countess and her son, who had been wounded in the last war, with a Swedish savant, and with a Mr. Canut and his sister. But the people with whom they necessarily associated most were a Moscow lady, Mary Evgenievna Vrchishvishva, and her daughter, whom Kitty found unpleasant because her illness was due to the same cause as Kitty's, a love affair, and a Moscow colonel, whom Kitty, from childhood, had seen and known in uniform with epaulets, and who here, with his small eyes, low collar, and coloured necktie, looked indescribably comical, and was also wearisome because it was impossible to get rid of him. When all this had become firmly established, Kitty began to feel very dull, especially at her father, as her father had gone to Carlsbad, and she was left alone with her mother. She was not interested in the people she knew, for she felt that nothing new would come from them. Her chief private interest was at the watering place consisted in observing those whom she did not know and making conjectures about them. It was a characteristic of Kitty's always to expect to find the most excellent qualities in people, especially in those she did not know. And now, when guessing who and what kind of people the strangers were, and in what relation they stood to one another, Kitty attributed to them extraordinary and splendid characters and found confirmation in her observations. Among these people, she was specially interested in a young Russian girl who had come to the watering place with an invalid Russian lady, Madame Stahl, as everyone called her. Madame Stahl belonged to the highest society, but she was so ill that she could not walk, and only on fine days occasionally appeared on the promenade in a bath chair. But not so much from illness as from pride, as the Princess Shcherbatskaya explained, Madame Stahl was not acquainted with any of the Russians there. The Russian girl looked after Madame Stahl, and so, as Kitty noticed, became intimate with all those who were seriously ill, of whom there were many in this place, and waited on them in the most natural way. This Russian girl, Kitty decided, was not related to Madame Stahl, but neither was she a paid companion. Madame Stahl called her by the diminutive Varenka, and others called her Mademoiselle Varenka. But, besides The fact that it interested Kitty to observe the relations of this girl with Madame Stahl and with others, she experienced, as often happens, an inexplicable attraction towards this Mademoiselle Varenka, and felt, when the girl's eyes met her, that the feeling was mutual. This Mademoiselle Varenka was not exactly past her early youth, but seemed to be a person destitute of youthfulness. She might be 19 years old, and she might be 30. If she examined her features, she was good-looking rather than plain, despite her unhealthy complexion. Her figure would have been good had she not been too lean and her head too large for her medium height, but she was not likely to prove attractive to men. She was like a beautiful which, though not yet in full bloom, is already beginning to fade and has no scent. Another reason why she could not be attractive to men was because she lacked that of which Kitty had too much, a restrained flame of vitality and consciousness of her own attractiveness. She seemed always occupied with something there could be no doubt about, and therefore it seemed that no side issue could interest her. By this contrast to herself, Kitty was especially attracted. She felt that in her and in her way of life could be found a model of what she herself was painfully seeking, interest in life, the worth of life, outside the social relations of girls to men, which now seemed disgusting to Kitty, who regarded them as shameful exhibitions of goods awaiting a buyer. The more Kitty observed her unknown friend, the more she was convinced that the girl really was the perfect being she imagined her to be, and the more she wished to make her acquaintance. The two girls came across one another several times a day, and every time they met, Kitty's eyes said, "Who are you? What are you? Surely you are delightful. You are the delightful creature I imagine you to be, but for heaven's sake, here." Her look added, "Do not think that I shall force myself on you. I simply admire and love you. I too love you, and you are very, very sweet. I should love you still more if I had the time," the stranger's look replied. And Kitty saw that the girl really was always occupied, now taking the children of some Russian family home from the wells, now carrying an invalid's plaid, or wrapping it around her, now trying to soothe an irritable patient, now choosing and buying biscuits for someone's coffee. Soon after the Shabatsky's arrival, two new persons who provoked everybody's disapproval began to appear of a morning at the Wells. They were a very tall, round-shouldered man with black eyes, naive, and at the same time dreadful and enormous hands, who wore an old overcoat, too short for him, and a slightly pockmarked, sweet-faced woman, badly and tastelessly dressed. Having recognized them to be Russians, Kitty at once began to make up a beautiful and touching romance about them. But the princess, having found out from the visitors' list that they were Nicholas Levin and Mary Ivanovna, explained to Kitty what a bad man this Levin was, and all her dreams about those two people vanished. Not so much because of what her mother had told her, as because the man was Konstantin's brother. These two people appeared very disagreeable to Kitty. This Levin, by his habit of jerking his head, now inspired an irrepressible feeling of aversion in her. It seemed to her that his large, dreadful eyes, which followed her insistently, expressed hatred and irony, and she tried to avoid encountering him. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Who's Kitty again? Is that the one that's married or the one that's not married? No, that's the one that's not married, isn't it? Pretty sure. All right, have your say about this chapter over on the subreddit. Thank you for listening. I will see you tomorrow.